Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Reading this morning from Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text Number 47. Very interesting. Verse and purport. The previous verses we're putting emphasis on the process of surrender for realizing the personality of Godhead. Brahma is speaking to Narada that the process of the limited having realization of the unlimited is only possible when one receives mercy. Just receive some mercy. When one receives mercy, daya, from Adbhuta Krama, the performer of Adbhuta, very wonderful activities, the personality of Godhead. When one gets that special mercy, then that which otherwise is unknowable becomes knowable. Yesham saesha bhagavan daya yed ananta daya. Unlimited mercy can come from the unlimited supreme. We're limited, so we can't receive the unlimited mercy of the Supreme unlimitedly, because we're limited. But whatever we can receive, it gives us the capacity to cross over, atitaranti jadeva maya, to cross over the ocean of this bewildering energy and see the Lord, experience our relationship with the Lord. Know things, find happiness, etc., that's just inaccessible in this realm. We can get that mercy. And then Brahma gives the method of getting that mercy. It's letting go of the bodily conception of life, and the sense of ownership of things that are connected to the body, I and mind conceptions of the material life, let go. The upadis, the designations that go with the bodily conception of life, the pursuit of enjoyment through sense pleasures in the embodied condition of life, letting go of those things. That's the do-nots. And then the do's is taking shelter of the instructions of those who are not ordinary human beings, the liberated souls. Take training for them through their instructions. Follow in their footsteps, understand the proper behaviors to perform, the proper mood of those behaviors to perform. When Krishna sees that taking place, he gives his mercy. And he gives his mercy through those representatives of his. Does it matter what our past was? No. It may be, you know, we may become more attached to darkness or to passion than to goodness because of past. But the letting go of goodness can also be difficult. And letting go of passion can also be difficult, and letting go of ignorance can also be difficult. One has to let go of the modes of nature. In any case, if one agrees to put himself under the guidance of such a devotee of the Lord, he can understand the signs of God and also become like the transcendental pure devotee of the Lord. And thus get liberation back to Godhead, back home for eternal happiness. Krishna is inviting. The Bhagavatam is rolling out a red carpet. Please come. Like the Shamantaka jewel little illustration. Satrajit says no. Please give up your attachments, your pride, your foolishness. No. I want the 170 pounds of gold every day. That's more important to me. Or whatever is more important to us. The illusion that's more important to us. No. So this verse goes the next step. Where do you go after that? In the verse, Brahma is describing what that realization is. What's on the other side of the ocean of illusion? What's waiting? Whew. It's very nice. It's like Vyas following the instructions of Narada describes in those really nice verses 1:7, 4-7, Bhagavatam, what his realization was when he followed Narada's instructions. What was his experience? What was on the other side? Which is the basis of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, because that's what Narada's instruction was. Get this realization, compose one literature that expands on that realization. So here's Brahma saying, what's on the other side? Would you like to know? I'd like to know. Let's see what he says. There's 11 points. I'll number them, and you very expert note takers can take note. What is realized as the absolute Brahman is, number one, full of unlimited bliss. That's a pretty good start. Number two, without grief, like unmixed absolute bliss, unlimited absolute bliss, minus the unwanted part. You know, any kind of material happiness besides it's temporary, it's mixed, even when it's happening. It's mixed with some unwanted part. Imagine happiness without any unwanted part. It's unlimited. Who's going to say no? It's a tragedy. Hmm. That is certainly, here's the third point, the ultimate phase of the supreme enjoyer, the personality of Godhead, so the personal feature. There's the happiness of Brahman, and there's the happiness of Paramatma realization, and there's the penultimate happiness of Bhagavan realization, the happiness of loving relationship. And the supreme enjoyer of that loving relationship is not us, it's Krishna. We're his servant, and that's the ultimate happiness for us. Fourth item, he is eternally void of all disturbances. And so if we associate with him, guess what happens? Material disturbances, that is. Disturbances as we know, because the other kind of disturbances are not disturbances. They're ecstasies, although they appear from our perspective, we were using this term yesterday, filters, as like our disturbances. Like, you know, Krishna leaving the gopis, and they're disturbed. Or Krishna's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, and the residents from Vrindavan are disturbed. Or the torrents of rain sent by Indra are coming, and they're disturbed. Looks like, you know, looks to us like it. The serpent is swallowing Nanda Maharaj. That's disturbing. Nanda Maharaj gets kidnapped by Varuna, taken away, and no one can find him. Looks like disturbance. Jatila and Kattila are coming when Radha and Krishna are trying to enjoy their pastimes together. Looks like disturbance. But it's ecstasy. It's all increasing affection and attachment for Krishna. From the transcendental perspective, that's what it is. So he's ever free from disturbance. Eternally. And the fifth item is fearless. There's fearless because there's, for many reasons, there's nothing temporary. There's no power that can surpass Krishna's power. There's no will that can supersede Krishna's will. His is an experience of fearlessness, and only one who has full shelter of Krishna has that similar experience of fearlessness. Prahlad Maharaj in the face of Hiranyakashipu, or Haridas Thakur in the face of being beaten in 22 marketplaces. Oh no, spare me. He was fearless. His statement to the Qazi was, even if you cut my body into little pieces, thousands of little pieces, I still won't stop chanting. Because the chanting is coming from the soul. The body isn't going to keep chanting, but the chanting is coming. It's a property of my soul. I can't stop, nor can you stop me. Whatever punishment you want, go ahead. I'm going to chant the holy names of the Lord. Fearless. Because of full shelter in the fearless. Number six, he is complete consciousness. Chaitana. As opposed to matter. Nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam, as opposed to matter. Number seven, uncontaminated. What's that? Uncontaminated kind of fits in with some of this other. Fearless, devoid of disturbances, the ultimate phase of enjoyment, of the ultimate enjoyer. But anyway, uncontaminated. Number eight, without distinctions. What is this, distinctions? It means, you know, like us, upadis. I'm this and you're that. For Krishna, there's no distinction. There's variety. But those varieties are all with a state of oneness because they're all in complete harmony in relation to Him. So there's variety without material distinctions. 9. He is the principal primeval cause of all causes and effects. The cause of all causes. So he has this absolute nature, and while he has this absolute nature, there's no cause of him. He causes things, and nothing causes him. So when he does, like, you know, why does Krishna da-da-da-da-da? Like, why is Krishna blue? People ask that question. There was some discussion about this. Different ways that Prabhupada answered that question when people would ask that question. And Prabhupada answered, why is the sky blue? And somebody gave a scientific thing. And Prabhupada said, the sky is blue because Krishna is blue. It's just a reflection of Krishna's blueness. Only Krishna's blueness is real blueness, and that's different blueness. He is absolute. He's the cause, and there's no cause. And that's unthinkable, because it's beyond our experience. What is something that causes other things that isn't caused by another something? He's the cause of all causes. Last word in existence, the original word. Number 10, in whom there is no sacrifice for fruitive activities. Krishna doesn't have to do something to get something. Make a sacrifice in order to enjoy. That means he's distinct from us. Because we're dependent and he's independent. There's nothing he has to do. Imagine. We'll always have stuff we have to do. Even if we're lazy, we have stuff we have to do. But Krishna doesn't have anything he has to do. And he does things. He just says this in Bhagavad Gita. He describes what he sets up and then says, he's not doing it because he has to do it. Why is he doing what he does? Out of love for his part and parcel living entities, he does so many things for material creation. He doesn't have anything to do. He doesn't have anything he has to do. So with those living entities that are favorable to him, his devotees, he enjoys with them. And those living entities that are inimical to him, he creates a situation that can rectify their bad attitude. And at the same time provide in an illusory way what they think that they want. Happiness without Krishna, which doesn't exist. So it has to be an illusion, so he gives them an illusion. Go ahead. Try to enjoy happiness without me. And he's making the arrangement. And he's hiding himself in their heart and directing their wandering so they can get just the combination of enjoyment without him that they think that they want to get. He just continues to change the kaleidoscope of illusion. All the while reminding them from within, this isn't real happiness. And the last, number 11, the illusory energy does not change. So this is very similar to what this last item is very similar to what Vyasadeva saw. In fact, did anybody go to verse 174? Bhakti yogena manasi samyak praniyate male apashyatam purusham purnam mayam cha yad apashayam. Nice verse. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak praniyate amale. All three of those words are very strong. So he didn't just do casual devotional service. He did devotional service. Bhakti yogena manasi, with his mind completely absorbed. Samyak, completely. Pranihate, amale, without any contamination, without any mixture, without any other shelter than absorption in Krishna. So that's what Vyas did, and this is what Brahma is recommending. It's what Brahma is recommending through the training of qualified devotees to come to that kind of devotional service. Then he saw Sakshat Purusham Purnam. He saw the original personality of Godhead himself. Purnam, in his fullness. How can you see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his fullness? It's like overwhelming. Circuit overload. Circuit breaker shut down and just, you know. Sakshat Purusham Purnam. And then, this last line here, Mayam Cha Tad Apashrayam. Apashrayam, he was situated by the Lord or behind the Lord or under the control of the Lord, but not influencing the Lord. Just the opposite. Under the control of the Lord, or in whom the illusory energy does not stand. So imagine walking around and having those 11 items of realization in your consciousness all the time. Or even for a moment, for a flash, having that experience. But it's not just a flash, it's a sustained state of consciousness the Bhagavatam is inviting us into. The wonderful purport by Srila Prabhupada reads, the Supreme Enjoyer, the Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Brahman or the Samam Bonam because of his being the Supreme Cause of all causes. That's one of the 11 items mentioned. So, the impersonal Brahman has a cause. The light in the room has a cause. It's a light bulb. And then the light bulb has its cause and has its cause. And ultimately, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes, including his Brahma-jyoti. He is the pratishtha of the jyoti. The source of light is the basis and support of the light. The conception of impersonal Brahman, realization, is the first step. Due to capital H, due to his distinction from the illusory conception of material existence. Or, in other words, impersonal Brahman is a feature of the Absolute, distinct from the material variegatedness, just as light is a conception distinct from its counterpart, darkness. But the light has its variegatedness, which is seen by those who further advance in the light. Okay, so you're in the material world, like Gopal Kumar, going through the layers of the universe. And when you reach the other side of the layers of the universe, there's this dazzling effulgence. Even closing his eyes, it was too intense. So intense. But continue, and then there's variegatedness within that jyoti. There's spiritual planets. And there's people doing spiritual things on those spiritual planets and spiritual forms in this state of unlimited bliss. And thus the ultimate realization of Brahman is the source of the Brahman light, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the summum bonum, or the ultimate source of everything. So, this verse, it very much parallels the Vyasa's realization. This is some appreciation of the beautiful Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam. The beauty of the composition of the Bhagavatam is in those essence verses, what Vyasa realized, the whole of the Bhagavatam is expanded, and here's one example. Brahma speaking to Narada, he's expanding on what Vyasa realized, or the composition of the Bhagavatam is expanding on Vyasa's realization. So what comes after? He saw the Supreme Lord and the living entity and the illusory energy and the whole of the spiritual world, Sakshat Purusham Purnam. The next verse is Yaya Samohito Jiva Atmanam Trigunatmakam. He saw the three gunas binding the living entity. And when you, it's like seeing somebody tied up with ropes, you feel bad. Oh, look at that poor living entity. Yaya Samohita Jiva. He's not only tied up, he's bewildered. Very bewildered and tied up. Oh, poor living entity. Why is that? Paropi manyate. Anartam api means although. Although he's para, manyate nartam. He's thinking of himself in terms of the body, which he isn't. So that false egoistic conception is the trigger that says to the modes of nature, get this guy, tie him up. Bewilder him. Paropi manyate anartam tat kritam chavi padyate. So the living entity doesn't have to be in that condition. He has a choice. Really? You're bound up, suffering and bewildering. Why stay there? You have a choice? What's the choice? Surrender to Krishna. No, I'll stay here and be bound up and bewildered and suffer. Are you sure? I won't surrender to Krishna. It's a tragedy. You'll have so many problems. I won't surrender to Krishna. I will conquer over all problems. I'm very powerful. Even if it doesn't happen, I can say I tried. So the Bhagavatam is calling us. Tamasi ma jyotir gama. Come to the light. Leave behind the darkness. Don't stay in darkness. And here's what the light is. Here it is. Here's it's on the other side after this procedure of devotional service, the things that were described the last few verses, are accomplished. Therefore, meeting the personality of Godhead includes the realization of the impersonal Brahman, as realized at first in contrast with the material inebriety. That's this tatkritam chabhipadyate, the living entity. By the process of surrender, and we're a little bit surrendered. And what relief are we experiencing from that little surrender? We're not experiencing what the perfected souls experience. But still we're encouraged to go on, because even this little bit, it's night and day difference. How the materialists are living their lives. So nasty. Whew. The whole material civilization. When I was visiting two places while in India, I made the comment, and the devotees just laughed. They said, one nice thing about where you live is there's nothing attractive out there. Nothing attractive. It's like living in New York. It's great to live in New York, because who can be attracted to that place? Other than preaching, it's a great place to preach. It's so many nasty living conditions, and unsafe and dirty and passionate and ugly, and the so-called beautiful, and just scratch a little bit and man, is it ugly. Nothing attractive. So that's a nice realization for devotees. Hey, out here, nice suburbia, it's nice. But it's not nice. It's also, it's an allure of so-called happiness. There's no real shelter here. At any moment, the whole thing comes down. Pandit Narayan shared this little anecdote yesterday, saying, in Southern California, they say, hey, global warming, it's great. They like warm weather. So it gets warmer, it's great. Except when the fires come and completely destroy million-dollar homes by the... just swallowing them up. Nothing you can do to stop it. All of their happiness being licked up by the tongue of the fire. Gone. So, in contrast with material inebriety is Brahman. Prabhupada gave the example. It's like banging your head against the wall and banging your head against the wall and banging your head against the wall and finally stopping. Ah. That's Brahman realization. What's positive about that? Cessation of material inebriety. Well, keep going. And there's the spiritual variegatedness in that realm of Brahman. And that's what Brahma is identifying here. The personality of Godhead is the third step of Brahman realization. So now he goes through some of these 11 items, not all of them. One of them is pratibodha matram. Pratibodha matram is a consciousness opposed to the material counterpart. That's how it's identified. Unlimited bliss without grief. Pratibodha matram. Just the opposite conception of material existence. How is that? In matter, there are material miseries. And thus, this is the first realization of Brahman. There is the negation of such material inebrieties. And there is a feeling of eternal existence distinct from the pangs of birth and death, disease and old age. That is the primary conception of impersonal Brahman. So what is that primary conception? It's experiencing sat, that which is, that which eternally exists, distinct from the temporary things that are covering that which is eternal. It's just like in a mode of goodness, they teach this in schools in India now. They call it value education. You've heard this before? It's mode of goodness. Now, what are things that are of value? It's principles. Mode of goodness, things that are enduring, like honesty, compassion, values of life. It's more enduring than passion. It's the happiness is flickering and leads to wrath and misery. So they can't teach religion, so they teach values, or try to. The problem is you can't teach values without that which supports values, without God. Because what's a value anyways? Hey, it's very subjective. I value getting what I want. I value passion. I value, then you can detail the passions. That's what I value. So where's the standard? But anyway, there's something that's enduring throughout generations and cultures and time. There are things that people generally, they value knowledge and they value kindness. Of course, what's an expression of kindness, again, is a subjective thing. But something that people value. It's because it's more representative of God, of godliness, of that which is enduring and eternal, lasting. That mode of goodness falls short of what is really spiritual, but in our present context of life, people take the values of goodness as being spiritual, isn't it? You know, somebody is non-violent. You know, they're whatever. You know, the environmentalists and the conservationists and, you know, that's spiritual. They tell the truth, they do things to help others. They find, you know, street dogs that got run over by a car and they go and, you know, give them veterinarian help and, wow, that's spiritual. Etc. No reference to scripture, no idea of what is really eternal, but it's a value that's better than, so that's spiritual. But it's not. In their book, it's spiritual. So what lies beyond temporal values? What's the basis and support of them? That's what is real, what is really spiritual. So the Vedas are inviting us to that realm of what is really spiritual. And so Prabhupada is helping us understand that the impersonal sat feature is just the beginning. Existence that is not subject to time. Happiness that is not subject to time and circumstance. And one can experience that to some limited degree by various disciplines. pratibodha matram, the opposite conception, consciousness opposed to the material counterpart that exists in the spiritual world. Or one who follows this process that Brahma has described. Next, the Supreme Lord is the supreme soul of everything, and therefore the supreme conception, in the supreme conception, affection is realized. Wow, this is not just existence, this is supreme affection in the realm of Brahman. The conception of affection is due to the relationship of soul to soul. I mean, there's a material kind of affection, and there's a spiritual affection. He gives an example. A father is affectionate to his son because there's some relationship of nearness between the son and the father. But that sort of affection is, in the material world, is full of inebriety. Contrasting, when the personality of Godhead is met, the fullness of affection becomes manifested because of the reality of the affectionate relationship. Like, you know, the sat, the eternal reality of that relationship. So that's the entrance in comes real feelings of affection. Very attractive. Let's go there. And we can't take our baggage with us. Can't take our darkness with us. Can't take our upadis with us. He is not the object of affection by material tinges of body and mind, but he is the full, naked, uncontaminated object of affection for all living entities because he is the Supersoul, the Paramatma, within everyone's heart. In the liberated state of affairs, the full-fledged affection for the Lord is awakened. Sounds like a good place to end the purport, but it keeps going. What's next? As such, there is an unlimited flow of everlasting happiness without the fear of its being broken, as we have experienced here in the material world. The relationship with the Lord is never broken. And thus there is no grief and no fear. Such happiness is inexplicable by words. And there can be no attempt to generate such happiness by fruit of activities, by arrangements and sacrifices. What are we waiting for? Again, this is going back to the phrase of the qualities of surrender. This is sarva atmana. Remember from yesterday. Without restriction, without reservation, by all means, like full throttle. No holding back. No, well, wait a minute. What if Krishna forgets me? I'm so small, I'm just this insignificant little speck. What if Krishna overlooks me? And what if Krishna isn't even there? Something, some doubts and faithlessness, holding back. But where there's no holding back, there's fearlessness. And one can experience that the fullness of Krishna's protection and shelter. But we must also know that happiness, unbroken happiness, exchanged with the Supreme Person, the personality of Godhead, as described in this verse,
transcends the impersonal conception of the Upanishads. So that's not a but, that's an and. It's but. But what one may have a some kind of an impersonal conception about what this unlimited happiness is, and we should abandon that impersonal conception. It's personal. Krishna is there waiting with his arms stretched out and we're looking the other way. I've got my projects over here. I have a really good plan for enjoyment. Maybe later. In the Upanishads, the description is more or less negation of the material conception of things, but this is not denial of the transcendental senses of the Supreme Lord. Herein the same is affirmed in the statements about the material elements. What is that? They are all transcendental, free from the contamination of material identification. So, this is getting down to like real practical stuff. What about our senses? We have these bodies which we're not. Now, what about them? What do we do with these things? The liberated souls are not devoid of senses. Otherwise, there cannot be any reciprocation of unhampered spiritual happiness exchanged between them, that's the living entity and the Supreme, in spontaneous, unbroken joy. All the senses, both of the Lord and the devotees, are without material contamination. So, in other words, when we engage in devotional service, what we're doing, one sense of what we're doing is, we're engaging our spiritual senses, or we're spiritualizing the material senses, but we're engaging our spiritual senses, animated by consciousness and the spirit of surrender to the Supreme. Our spiritual senses are being developed, purified, directly experienced. Now they're dormant, just like when asleep. We're not experiencing. I was so tired last night from jet lag when I took rest. There was noise. I knew I'd be able to sleep because I was so tired. Didn't hear a thing. Didn't smell a thing. But the senses are nonetheless there. Dormant. The spiritual senses are dormant. But when activated by this submission to the Supreme Lord and trained and guided by the pure devotees, our spiritual senses are again activated and they can experience the Supreme through those spiritual senses. They are beyond material contamination because they are beyond material causes and effects. That's the spiritual senses. As clearly mentioned here, sad, asata, param, from the verse. That's Krishna's position, and our spiritual position, when connected with Krishna, becomes like his position, or becomes restored to like his position, just by his contact. This is the medium of bhakti. Wonderful purport, huh? In the material world, the sense activities are not without grief. But here, it is clearly said that the senses of the Lord and the devotees are without any grief. There is a distinct difference between the material and spiritual senses, and one should understand it without denying the spiritual senses because of material conception. Almost done. One more paragraph. The senses in the material world are surcharged with material ignorance. In every way, the authorities have recommended purification of the senses from the material conception. It's the problem. We have these contaminated senses and desires and we're so unfortunate. But then you take that which is in this impure state and you bring it to the place of purity to make them pure. In the material world, the senses are manipulated for individual and personal satisfaction, whereas in the spiritual world, the senses are properly used for the purpose for which they were originally meant, namely the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. That's what devotional service is. And that's the training and the instructions that we receive in the process of devotional service. Concluding sentence. Such happiness of transcendental quality is called Brahma-sokhyam, which will be clearly described in the fifth canto. What's that? That this is Rishabhdev's instructions to his sons. 5:5:1. Fifth canto, chapter 5. Where Rishabhdev... So, what we're getting here is now Rishabhdev's instructions as like an expansion of Vyasadeva's realization. Vaya samovito jiva atmanam trigunamak. So he starts by saying that this human form of life is never meant to be utilized in the same ways that the dogs and animals of this world engage themselves, namely sense gratification. We're to, his instruction is, you are to reject, or we are to reject that way of life, but we're to accept Tapo Divyam Putrakayena Satvam Shudyad Yasmad Brahma Sokyam Twanantam. There's that phrase. Brahma Sokyam Twanantam. And how do we get that? The spiritual happiness that's unlimited. Brahma, Sukh, Anantam. Spiritual happiness that's unlimited by this process of surrender. I don't want to surrender. Okay. Then we have our other option, the default mode. But the real happiness is Tapo Divyam. So, making me think of Himangi's question yesterday, that there may be something we don't want to do. Our emotions say, you don't want to do this. But Tapo Divyam, if we can connect with how it's pleasing to Krishna, then it's Brahma Sokyam Twanantam, if we can make that connection. You know, we have our present conditioning and our limitations and so forth. That has to be considered, but at least in an ultimate position of reality, staying in our comfort zone is not happiness. But venturing beyond that, according to our capacity, according to our faith, according to the Prabhupada's language here is proportionately with the advance of one's surrender. By the grace of Yoga Maya, one can experience Brahma Sokyam Tvantam, unlimited happiness. So the choice, the invitation is coming from the Lord to go there, to come to Him. The devotees, like Brahma here, giving ample, detailed information and instructions and encouragement to how to get there. And then we make our decisions, whether we want to take it up or not. Just by contacting these messages of the Bhagavatam, fortunately, our existence is because of the Bhagavatam. by osmosis or by contact with these sound vibrations, it's having its effect. Spiritual osmosis. By any discussion? Right at that moment? Well, a lot of one big thing that you can do is what you just said. You know, prepare yourself for those moments. Qualitatively, take devotional practices. At that very moment, something, depending upon faith, but something I can recommend is reach out. Like a child is fearful. No one has to train up the child what to do when they're fearful. They cry. They call out. And they eagerly try to find the shelter of their mother and father. And as soon as they're feeling the security, I mean, not always, but quite often, it's almost like at once. It may take a little bit of, you know, some more sobs and palpitations and stuff, but coming. Of feeling Krishna's shelter in those moments by reaching out. Not even that the externals need to change. A big part of the external is mind. It's just changing the orientation of the mind to shelter Krishna. So those moments of apparent tribulation are really great opportunities. Sensitized to the stark realities of where our dependencies are, where our shelters are. Often our shelters are in the configuration of the material energy. When it's way off kilter, we're feeling very insecure. But that's not our shelter anyways. That's illusion. What's our real shelter? So it's a great opportunity. Take shelter. feelingly. Anything else?
Guru Maharaj, it's more an expression of appreciation. That since we've been hearing since yesterday morning, last night and this morning, I'm appreciating how wonderful the disciplic succession is. That the message is consistent, or the language might seem a little different. Message is so consistent from what Lord Brahma is speaking, to Vyasadeva's realizations, to Srila Prabhupada's purpose, and how we're being trained by you. And just the message is so consistent that we get, to the extent of our proper application, a little glimpse into that experience, although once in a while, in a flash sometimes, or not even, but this an appreciation.
A sense of a happiness that's beyond the temporary.
Yes.
The Bhagavatam, another appreciation is that the Bhagavatam is very gentle. You know, the experiences that we have in life are not so gentle. But the Bhagavatam is gently coaxing us. You know, stripping away all shelters very gently. Bringing us to the spiritual position. Lifting us to what we need to go another step and go another step. And go very gently and very, very beautifully. Srimad. Service and want to come visit in the room.
Thank you.